This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
My own renovation expert is here in the studio. That is good service.
It is. I even brought my tools with me.
He walks in with the tools. It's actually just filled with his lunch. 514-790-0800. Actually, you know, let's be honest, full disclosure. Last year, I hired Renovco. Mm-hmm. And Walter was good enough to send me the bill. And I took care of it. I got a beautiful patio door and screen installed, right, in my kitchen. Your guy, Romy, did a great job. And he also he installed a new kitchen window above the kitchen sink that my wife wanted. And we changed the panes in our windows upstairs in the master bedroom.
It's still holding up?
Everything's holding up.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that. That's always a good sign a year after the fact.
No, they worked. We desperately needed a new patio door, and we love the one that...
I'm sure you enjoy opening it and closing it now.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. The calls are coming in at 514-790-0800. Are you ready to get to work?
Absolutely.
We're going to go to La Prairie and bring in Dean. Hi, Dean.
Hey, good morning, Ken. How are you?
I'm very good. Say hi to Walter.
Hi, Walter. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Dean, you want to talk about, you've got a triplex, built in the 60s?
Yeah, so we have a triplex built in 1960s. We have to do some repairs to the ledge. We have to replace all the ledge underneath the windows, and we have to repair some of the lintels above the window. Mm-hmm. So some people are telling us to repair the lintel, they're going to use either silicone or mortar. I wanted to know what's better that's going to blend in well with the repair. And also, we have to replace some of the bricks underneath the ledges that we're replacing. And some people are saying that they're going to use new bricks or they're going to use reused bricks. And we want to know if one is better than the other because we're trying to match the old La Prairie big bricks that are like a red color tone.
Okay. So the let's start with the first thing first. The bricks under the ledges. Now, if your ledges are leaking or there's any cracks in them, typically you'll have deterioration on those bricks.
Right.
Now, it doesn't really matter whether you go with old bricks or new bricks as long as the bricks are not cracked or deteriorated.
Okay.
Your real challenge, to be quite frank with you, is to match the color of the existing bricks. So reclaimed bricks or recycled bricks are usually a better option because, you know, if you're lucky enough, you'll find something very similar from the same time era, and that will do the job.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, in a lot of cases, what we might end up doing is you take the brick itself, and the good brick, what you do is you switch it around, and you install it upside down, meaning the back of it is facing towards the outside. And, you know, you get the good part that is less chipped or deteriorated. Because sometimes it's just a bit of deterioration and the back of the brick is still in good shape. You can still buy another 25 years, 30 years out of that brick.
Really?
And that way, that's correct. And that way, you kind of ensure that you preserve your curb appeal and you don't diminish the, if you want, the cosmetic look of your house for resale or what have you. Yeah, and so that's one. The second part about the ledges themselves, you were asking me, am I correct?
No, I'm talking about the, as far as the bricks are concerned, can they match closely the grout that's already there, like the color of the grout and all that?
So the quick answer is yes. That's the easiest part to do.
Okay.
The only word of caution I give you is that when you first do it and it's fresh and before it cures, it might be a little bit darker, but it will fade with time.
Okay.
So if you have a good brick layer, 9 out of 10 times it's just a straight mortar. It's not a problem. Sometimes there is a bit of a color in the brick and in the mortar, I should say. So they are able to match it. It's not a difficult thing to do. You just have to make sure that they spend the time because sometimes they just don't care and they do whatever they have in their truck and they schlep it in. So you just have to make sure to mention it and to kind of insist on it that they spend some time really looking at the color of the mortar.
How's that, Dean?
Well, the other question, quick question I had was the lintel that we have to repair. Some of them have a little bit of crack, and they were telling us, are they going to use silicone or we're going to use Sika grout. And I'm thinking with silicone, it's really not going to match what's there. It's going to leave, you're going to see the appearance of silicone between the cracks of, in the lintel.
My problem with silicone, I call it the bubblegum solution, right? It's number one, it's not, it's going to be awful ugly to look at, to have, you know, caulking right mm-hmm. in front of, you know, and something usually it's part of your curb appeal to find at least something nice and, you know, to look at above the window. So that for me is the first no-no. I mean, unless you're in the dead of winter and you want to do something very temporary because you don't want water to come in. But it's by no means, you know, a long-term solution.
Okay.
Okay. Now, if you want to use mortar, is, of course, a better option. But then again, depending on how deteriorated it is and how, you know, how many cracks there is and how deep the cracks are and how wide the cracks are, because they might re-crack again. Okay.
Okay.
Given that, sometimes it's a better option to just simply replace the lintel if it's way too gone. And, you know, so it's going to be a judgment call with you and your brick mason.
Okay.
Having said that, if you find that the cracks are not too pronounced, not too deep and not too wide, and, you know, there's not many of them on one lintel, you might want to try go with the Sika solution first.
Okay, so that's a better option then.
100%.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your help. Really appreciate it. Love the show. And have a great day.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Dean. Appreciate the call. 912. We're going to sneak in a quick call from Moncton. Bruce, is that you?
Yeah, just a sec.
Just a second.
Take your time.
Yeah, I'm helping my wife with the garden.
Oh, very good. Well, look at you. Very good. Bruce, we got 3 minutes. You want to talk to Walter about some ladybugs?
Yeah, the ladybug lookalikes from Asia that evil sink bugs, my wife calls them.
Evil sink bugs.
Yeah, they seem to be a lot more this year, and they seem to be everywhere rather than just in a couple of places. I was wondering if there's any, I mean, in the windows, but on the siding and that kind of stuff, is there anything I can do about them?
First of all, are they in one particular place?
No.
They're everywhere? Okay. Yeah. All right. I mean, there are products out there that you could use for ladybugs. My main issue is where they're coming from. Okay. One of the areas you want to look at is around window and window sills and ledges.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's where they primarily come. Yes.
That's correct. So that's where I want to start with the source, and you know, rather than just treat them from the inside, because from the inside you're going to be fighting a losing battle. As long as they have that trail to come in, they're going to keep on coming in.
Yeah.
So the best option is to ensure complete verification is done to all your windowsills, all your caulking, any potential place they might be able to come in, and seal that first.
Okay, verification and then sealing them?
That's right. So if you're missing caulking somewhere, you're missing mortar somewhere else, you know, if you have a hole in your siding, that's where you're going to have, you know, that's probably where their trail is. That's why I asked you if you have, you know, certain rooms more than others. The problem is once they start somewhere, they might, you know, migrate to other areas in your house. So
right.
You might have an area that is, you know, wide enough that they're coming in from. You want to break that trail. After that, there's many, many, many products that you could, you know, research, and we're not going to promote any of them at this point. But that will help get rid of them or even cut their trail
mm-hmm.
from the outside.
Okay. How's that, Bruce?
Yeah, it's the Asian beetle. It's the same thing, whether ladybugs or the Asian beetle that looks like the...
I mean, I'm not an expert on insects, but usually if it's in the same family, it's, you know, they usually, the products that are done for ladybugs tend to cover many species of these insects. You know,
okay, thank you ever so much.
My pleasure.
All right, Mike, appreciate the call. Look at the time, it's 9:15. Walter's not going anywhere. Call now if you want to talk to him, pick his brain on something that you need taken care of at home, 514-790-0800.
You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
You certainly are. It's Ken Connors alongside Walter Assey from Renovco. 514-790-0800 is our number here for you to call in and get some guidance, get some inspiration, get some advice from Walter. Let's go to Michelle, who's calling from the South Shore, Brossard. Hi, Michelle.
Good morning, Ken.
Good morning. You want to talk about your shower. What's going on?
So we have a shower that is 48 by 36 inches. It's not big. And it is. We bought a slate floor for that shower that's integrated, has the angle integrated in it. It's quite heavy. I believe it's about 200 pounds. And our wish is to have the shower be the same, the shower floor be the same level as the rest of the bathroom. So the question is, we've opened up now where the area of the shower is going to be, the floor of the shower. And there are struts, there are support beams there, and I'm wondering, we need to cut those beams by about a half inch so that that base can settle and sit so that it's at the same level once the ceramics are put in for the rest of the bathroom floor. And I'm wondering how, what concern is, should we put a some kind of a support, and is it taking a half inch off the support beams a problem structurally?
That's a great question. So what you're looking for is to install a stepless shower.
Yeah.
And the stepless showers usually require that they come pre-sloped. So you have a base you come, you buy, like a Nordic base or Schluter base. It comes pre-sloped. In certain cases, yes, you need to go a bit lower than the floor in order to create that slant. So either there's two ways to do this. Either you go, you hire the floor a tad throughout the whole bathroom, and then
Michelle, do you mind turning the radio down, because we're getting a lot of it here.
Sorry,
that's all right.
Is that better? Is that okay?
Well, as long as you turned it off, sure.
Ken doesn't want to hear my voice twice. I find that irritating.
Sorry to interrupt. Sorry to interrupt. Carry on, Walter.
Yeah. So. So there's two ways of doing this. Either you hire the floor of the bathroom in general a tad, and then that will give you the capability of creating that slope, because now you're a bit higher, so you don't have a problem. Or in certain cases, you shave off a bit of the joist below. That is a very tricky question, because we don't know the status of the joists. We don't know if these are engineered joists or they're like regular, you know, are they 2x10s, 2x12s? So there's a lot of questions to ask. Are they 16-inch center? So I'm not going to venture so much on the structural. That I'd rather you ask, you know, a structural engineer or an architect, just to kind of have an opinion. And that you could even Zoom with them if the floor is open. They don't even need a visit and just a consultation. So I'm going to be very reticent giving you advice on, you know, cutting half an inch on the beam. What I can tell you is it's been done before with no, in most cases, it does not have repercussions. But in certain cases, it was a definite no-no for us. That's what I could tell you.
Wow. Okay, so the question, Walter, is that should there, when we cut off that half inch, if we decide to go that way and everything's okay, is the idea or the principle is to put a plywood, a floor flat under that stone, or is it okay to be sitting on two or three joists with the middle parts being open? Is there a chance that it cracks the stone?
No, you don't need a plywood. If you have the base, you don't need a plywood underneath. That is, you know, what you might need, or what my structural engineer asked you to, is maybe to sister those joists in order to kind of support them or to give additional support. But you don't need under the base itself any plywood.
Okay.
The base is more than enough. It's sturdy enough, and it's actually made for that.
It's very heavy. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Michelle. Enjoy the day.
Thank you.
Bye.
You
too. Bye. For Michelle, we are going to go to Mike in St. Lazare. Mike, hi.
Hi, good morning, Walter.
Good morning.
Well, I'm living in St. Lazare, and a couple of weeks ago we have the blackout, and my sump pump doesn't work, and it floods my basement.
Mm.
And to fix the root cause, I want to know, I know there is in the market has a sump pump with backup battery, mm-hmm. but how long that battery lasts if you No, and if you can tell me.
Okay. So, yeah, you're talking about a backup battery. It's like a battery with a, what looks like a car battery backup, and it's hooked into to the sump pump. So it's another sump pump, and you put the floater a bit higher than the actual sump pump that you have on the pit. And as soon as the water rises to that floater, that's a signal for that system to kick in, which for me is a fantastic product as far as even a backup system to your existing sump pump. Because in certain cases where you know, you have very high water table or you have a torrential downpour, sometimes your sump pump pit gets overloaded. So the pump itself cannot supply enough because it's not strong enough, it's tired, or you know there's simply too much pressure coming in. So that acts as a secondary pump in, you know, to help the existing pump in case you have as well electricity. So that is a good thing to have regardless, power outage or not. The only downside to it is that if you do have a power outage, and depending on the brand that you buy, it's anywhere between 6 to 12 hours. That it's only good for 6 to 12 hours, and then you're dead in the water. Okay, so if we have similar outages like we had a few weeks ago, that system, and most of the time, day two, you know, people got flooded because it didn't work anymore. That's the only downside with it. So the only thing you can do or think about is... you know, unfortunately, in a case like this, would be a backup generator if it's more than a 24-hour outage. Okay? But as a system, because in any which case, and that's one common mistake that homeowners would do, is they would have this one lonely, unique sump pump in their pit. And, you know, they say, fine, if there's electricity, no electricity. But you know what? These things, at one point, they die. They just, you know, they cease from working. And the only way, unfortunately, you know that is, you know, when you get flooded and you say, oh, it's not working anymore. So by you having a backup sump pump of some kind, what you're doing is you're kind of sending yourself a signal that something is wrong with your principal sump pump when that thing kicks off. Now, what I like about this in particular and why I say I like it as a sump, as a backup sump pump in general, not just for power outages, that this thing have an alarm on it. And as soon as it kicks in, it rings. So now, let's say you have electricity and you see that the battery powered one is kicking in, it's, you know, it's for you to go down and check out that sump pump pit, see what's going on. In most cases, you realize that your actual sump pump is burned or defective, and that's a signal for you to replace it. So it's a win-win throughout the whole way. That's what I'm trying to say.
What do you say, John?
Yeah. How about like the last couple of weeks, the blackout, it lasts 4 or 5 days. And my sump pump, usually at that time, it run every 15 minutes. So if the backup battery can last for that 4 or 5 days?
Not at all. Not even close.
No?
Not even close.
So
you will have 12 hours, you know, they some claim 24 hours. I have not seen 24 hours yet personally, but the max you will have, if I go with some of the providers, is 24-hour backup. That's the max that I found in those batteries.
So in this case, what should we do?
In this case, unfortunately, and I've, you know, we've seen a lot of flooded basement with these backup systems simply because of that. Because day two, they ran out of juice, and then they had no choice. But the only thing that I see that really works is a backup generator. That's honestly for long term, 4, 5, 6 days, like we had. That's the only answer I have for you.
How about the backup battery that we buy separately?
Even with that, like, so I mean, even with that, you're continuously buying 12 to 24 hours, right? So how many backup batteries are you going to put?
Okay.
Don't forget, this time some people missed electricity for 6 consecutive days. So I don't know of any battery that will actually last that long, personally, unless someone else can help me. I know deep cell batteries and what have you are made to run longer, but I've never seen anything that runs that long before.
And I have another question.
Oh, Mike. John, you know what? Sorry, it's Mike, right? Mike, we have to break for news. I'm going to put you on hold for 1 second. I keep calling him John for some reason, but it's Mike in St. Lazare. Don't worry, Norma, John, we're going to get you, Rosemere and St. Mac. But right now, let's head to the newsroom and get you up to date.
You might just need to tighten the thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
It is 9:36. Plenty of time to talk to Walter here during the second half. We're going to just wrap up quickly with Mike in St. Lazare. Mike, we only have a quick minute. You have one more question for Walter?
Yes, Mike. Walter, how about just talking about the backup sump pump? So we need another spare sump pump that we can plunge into the sump and connect to the same line?
Well, if you have the battery-powered one, that is your backup pump, regardless whether you have electricity power or you don't have, because the floater is set a bit higher, so when the water level goes up beyond the actual sump pump floater, that's when it kicks in, again, regardless if you have power or not. So that's why I'm saying it is 2-in-1, if you wish. It will give you some power. We actually had one of the texters said that his backup battery lasted him 2.5 days. That's actually impressive. If you can just maybe text us the brand, that would be great. Mm-hmm. Because I've seen them up to 24 hours. I've never seen them that going to 48 hours. But it also, in all fairness, depends how much you use it, what's the water table, the frequency that it's kicking in, and so on and so forth. That you don't need to have a third, I mean, unless you really have a high water table and it's really a problem, but in this case, you might need also a deeper pit.
Okay. All right.
But in most cases, it's more than enough.
Mike, good luck with the project. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to John in Rosemere. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. You're on with Walter.
Well, I'm glad to see you, hear you, and I love your program. We're considering buying a heat pump, and we have been checking out Hydro. Has a new program that involves what they call a Steph thermal storage unit. It involves a traditional heat pump, but it has a furnace that you load up with ceramic bricks, and you can have over 2,000 pounds of bricks in your basement in this new furnace. So we're wondering, we found out that there's a 5-year warranty and limited warranty, and we checked with CAA, and they say it's too new to comment. So we're concerned, is there a service or parts program that goes with this Hydro Steph thermal storage unit? And the other time, question that we have is, we have a bungalow that was built in 1953. It has actually the traditional insulation that was used then, and so we're really saying, is it worth getting a heat pump for our home?
Okay, Walter.
All right, so the first part of the question, from my side, I will also not comment. It's too new. And then, to be quite frank, I don't know enough about it. So I'm not going to comment on something that I'm not very aware of. I'm very reticent when it's a new technology, because usually, you know, whatever comes out, that's what you, when you know what works and doesn't work, second, third, fourth generation is usually best.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to even comment on that, and I will not go any further on that issue. As far as heat pumps are concerned, it's always a good idea, regardless of what type of insulation, specifically if you have, if you want inadequate insulation or not enough insulation, you want to be paying a heat pump rates rather than the furnace, when, you know, it takes a lot less power and hydro. And now the heat pumps, as everybody knows, it's it works up to minus 30. So you're always paying cheaper to heat your home or to cool it while using the heat pump rather than using the furnace. So in your case, it's actually a great idea to have a heat pump, because you're badly insulated.
Okay.
You see the problem with the 1950s, you said 50s, right? Insulation?
Yes.
Yeah. In those days, there's many things. It's fiberglass in most cases, but these homes did not have vapor barriers. The insulation had this paper, which did not really act as a vapor barrier.
Right.
And with time, due to condensation, as soon as that insulation gets wet, it loses its R value. So you'll have these pockets of zero R value or very low R value in your exterior walls. And, you know, condensation happens. In certain cases, you see marks on the walls, mold, and so on and so forth. So you need some type of a heating system that's not going to cost you so much money in the process, because you are losing heat whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And the alternatives of you re-insulating your whole house might be too pricey. Now, my advice, though, is if you renovate, when you're renovating, update whatever room that you're renovating, update the insulation one by one. So if you're doing the bathroom, ensure that you have adequate urethane insulation. If you're doing your kitchen, the same thing, the basement, and so on and so forth. So at least you're improving the insulation as you go. It might be a big undertaking to do everything at the same time. But when you do it room by room, you won't feel it, but you'll start, at least reaping the benefits out of it.
Hmm. Hey, John.
Okay, so thank you very, very much. We appreciate your information and your advice.
Oh, John, you're so polite. Call back more often.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Walter, I'm going to try to sneak in Norma before we have to break at 9:45. Norma, are you there?
Yes.
Yes. What is your question for Walter?
My question for Walter is that we have been trying to reach our insurance agent since January 13th, 14th, and nobody ever came out. Despite our calls, it was taken by one of the people who takes a call, and despite our calls, nobody came out so far. So, which is quite long. We have quite a bit of damage, and would like to have... since I hear Walter every weekend, maybe I can talk to him, explain to him what it is, and then he can go from there.
Well, you're talking to him right now.
It's
Marilyn, right? From Rigo is calling.
Yes.
Yeah,
Norma called before.
Yeah. No. Okay. Very good. Go ahead, Marilyn.
Yeah. It's a long time from the January thing on till now, and we had another ice storm now, and there's some more damage. So we really would like to have somebody to come out to have a look and fix it and get things in order.
So what's your question?
Well, where can I talk to Walter Asti after hours?
Okay, so I mean, as far as insurance is concerned, there are escalation ways that you should undertake. First of all, with insurance, everything should be done in writing.
I have in writing.
Let me just finish 2 seconds. I'm just going to make it simple for you so you could just see the general picture. There are, with insurance companies specifically, whether you're dealing with them or they're dealing with you, they follow a certain motto. If it's not documented, it did not happen. So if you don't have an email or it's not something written, and it's your word against theirs, they're always going to back up their experts, their people, and so on and so forth in these cases. So you always want to make sure that, you have emails, letters.
If I may interrupt you,
yes.
That was the first thing I did. I asked them to confirm in writing that they have received the request for their expertise to come out and give an estimate, And we've been calling
now,
and we only get this employee on who's very pleasant.
Okay, Marilyn.
Let me just tell you what the escalations are. I'm going to make it simple for you. So, if you keep it at the employee level, you might not get anywhere. What you want to do is call back and ask for a supervisor, a customer relations supervisor, and speak to them and explain for them what happened. Now, if you have everything in writing, it's awesome, because what you could do is you could put all of that together and send it to them to show them that there was, a lack of cooperation or service. Mm-hmm. Having said that, there are other places where now you can call. If you see, even with that, the insurance company does not give you back the service you need, is you call the Insurance Board of Canada, you make a complaint, you send everything that you sent, you show that you had no answers back, and then they take care of the complaint, going forward. So, and believe me, when that happens, usually they act way quicker.
Oh, there you go. All right, okay. Marilyn, thank you very much for the phone call.
Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show, CJAD 800.
Yes, you are. Call now if you want to talk to Walter at 514-790-0800. Walter Assey from Renovco. Let's go to Surrender out in Pierrefonds. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's happening with those gutters? Are they blocked?
I think it's lots of ice builds of every winter time.
Mm.
And I had a little leak inside this year. So what is causing? That's what I want to know.
Why would you mention gutters?
It's mostly because when the ice, melt, it's the loss of ice on the gutters.
Yeah. So, I understand. The gutters are one
part. Oh, ice builds, yeah.
Yeah, one part of the equation. But
at the end,
of the puzzle, but it's not really
the
only thing, or in some cases, not the cause. Now, when we talk about gutters, we always look at the status and the condition of the gutters.
My gutters, they seem to be very nice, actually.
Okay.
Walter's going to answer you, Surrender. Hang on.
So here's the thing. Number one, you want to look at the size of the gutters versus the size of the roof. Very common mistake is you see a lot of 4-inch gutters or even sometimes 5-inch gutters, but on a massive roof that requires a commercial size gutter, like up to 6 inches.
Mm.
The other part of it is, you want a continuous gutter as much as possible. So anything that have seams in it, with time, that the seam might leak and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And the third thing you want to look at is the downspouts, okay? So the downspouts in the winter, sometimes when you have mild weather, they are frozen because at the bottom, there's an accumulation of ice. So unblocking that will help evacuate the water buildup from your gutter, especially with our milder winters that we've been getting.
Yeah.
Now, that's one part of it. The other part is the whole system, roof, ventilation, attic, insulation have to be looked at.
Okay.
More often than not, it's condensation. Have heat loss from your home because you don't have adequate insulation in your attic. So what happens is that the heat escapes, gets the snow to melt on your roof at a much faster pace.
Mm.
All of it goes down to the end. Uh-huh. And that's where you have the ice buildup and so on and so forth. So you need to kind of find the root cause, and the gutter is really the last of the puzzle that you will look at.
Because the roof is only 2 years old, I got it done.
The roof is not the issue in this case. The roof is not the issue. What you have is probably ice buildup. So when you have ice buildup on a gutter, and due to other underlying conditions like we just mentioned, the shingles gets lifted, and then the water travels upstream under the shingle. Due to hydrostatic pressure, it goes actually surprisingly in certain cases, depending on the slope of the roof. We've seen it up to 10 feet.
Is there any specialist, the insulation specialist?
You could start with an insulation specialist, yes. You could start with that.
You have any number for any specialist?
I would not give numbers on air. It's not really, we don't endorse any particular company. There's a lot of them out there.
Mm-hmm.
But, soon enough we'll have a database of the ones that we could, recommend. Okay. At this point, I would not mention any names.
You can easily search the Surrender online.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. I'm just having a flashback. Remember the one we used to get out the Yellow Pages?
Yeah, my God.
The Yellow Pages.
That was crazy.
Yeah, those, every year you get the new Yellow Pages at the door. Walter, what did you think of this text? I don't know if you have it there in front of you from Alfie out in Le Cedre. It says a car can supply power to a 12V sump pump for extended periods.
Well, the question is, what is extended periods? Mm. See, car battery is made to produce so much power at once, but it's not really made for long-term usage. So what you really need is a deep cell type battery, not a car type battery. So I've never used a car battery for that purpose, simply because the logic behind it does not make sense. So if it's a deep cell battery, a boat battery could work, should work longer in principle.
I just want to sneak in another text or two because we got so many. It says, hi, Walter and Ken. In my kitchen, I'd like to install vinyl flooring over existing ceramic tiles. What specifications should the vinyl planks have? Is laminate better?
I personally like vinyl more because it's more resistant to water in kitchens, okay? So laminate flooring, my real apprehension about it is that any water that goes in it, you drop a glass of water, it will bubble and deform and delaminate. 12 millimeter is a good size, and if you're going with planks, try to go with the cork-backed planks because it gives you a certain warmness and a softer thing. And plus, it actually covers a bit better any joints. If you have those heavy, ugly joints that we used to see in the 90s and the 80s, it will cover them better, and it won't protrude through the vinyl itself. So a thin vinyl, you might see the lines in the ceramic. Thicker vinyl would be better.
Hope that was some help there, Texter. Thank you very much for that. Thank you to everyone who called in and took part in the show. Walter, have a great week.
Thank you so much yourself as well.
Terrific hour. Jimmy G, thank you. Don't go anywhere. Lisa's ready to go. She's chomping at the bit to get in here and answer your calls about your vehicle at 514-790-0800. Latest from the newsroom. We'll get you up to date with Don Keegan-Fleming, and then Lisa's ready to go.